Session number 22621, Reel 5.
John Adams, Reel 5.
After about 3 days, I woke up, and my first feelings were how hungry I was. So I thought, well, I must be all right now. So I got up, shaved, dressed, went across to the cookhouse, such as it was, and I said to the cook, look, I said, I've had nothing to eat for 3 days. I want you to do me a good meal. Which they did, and by job, it wasn't half good.
And then you were all right?
I was all right then, yeah. But it was so hot there, it was the hottest time of the year. I forget the temperature, I think, went up to about 120 Fahrenheit at times. But we had to get up at 5 in the morning and do any work we had to do before it got hot. And then in the afternoon, we used to take a 1500 weight truck to the Salt Lake, and we used to swim for the afternoon. We'd dive in and swim, and then we'd come out and dry in the sun, and when it got too hot, we'd dive back in again. And there was a Scotsman there with a canteen. And he was selling donuts and cakes and coffee and stuff and lemonade and everything. And we did that every day.
Was this in the canal zone?
Yes. Oh, yes. The Salt Lake. The canal come right through the canal. The canal came right through the Salt Lake. And one evening, we were within easy sight of the pyramids, and the size of the pyramids and the clear atmosphere, they only looked to be about 3 or 4 miles away. So that night we'd all been invited to the officer's mess. The colonel was throwing a party. So the lads were saying, oh, I shouldn't go if I were you. And the colonel was a great big bloke, Scotsman of course. When he's had a few drinks, he's throwing everything about and doing everybody.
You mean violent?
No, he was good natured, but he'd get rough. So we took his advice and we didn't go. And myself and the MT sergeant, also a Scotsman, I said, come on, Eddie, we'll go on across and have a look at the pyramids. So we set off, and they never got any nearer. And we walked and we walked and we walked. And it was trackless desert land there, you see, once he left the tracks. And it started to get dark. So I said, come on, Eddie, we'd better get back. But we couldn't find our way back. So he said, what shall we do? I said, oh, we'll just keep walking, that's all. Fortunately, we come across a roadway. So we stuck to it. And we knew the general direction of the camp, but it was early hours before we got back. Party was long since finished. But it was a good unit to serve in, actually.
Had the war finished by now?
Oh, no. We stayed in Egypt for 6 weeks. But the infantry lads and some of the artillery lads, they used to go into Cairo, and they'd go in the canteen and get a good feed or something, a good drink. And then they'd smash the place up instead of paying. And the artillery lads who were in there, they used to get them to put a barrage in before they went in, which meant picking chairs up and throwing them over the bar and everything. So the conclusion was that they were getting taxis and garage, these Austrian vehicles, back to camp. And so far as the taxis were concerned, when they got back to camp, they just got out and turned it over. The powers that be decided that we'd better go back to the fighting if there's a war like. And we went back to Italy again.
Can you tell me about what happened when you got back?
What, to camp?
No, back to Italy.
Oh, back to Italy. Well, we took the same route on the Liberty ship to Taranto. Then we collected our equipment. Not our same, in fact, I was disappointed because our equipment was a lot better than the stuff we collected when we went back. And we went up the East Coast again and we finished the Italian campaign.
Did you see much action after you got back?
Well, it was just the usual sort of thing, consolidating. No, we didn't see an awful lot of action.
Do you remember where you ended up when the war finished?
Oh, yes, I remember, because on the last day of the campaign in Italy, we got... In fact, it's the only time I remember where I just felt a tiny pang of despair, because the Germans were shelling away. We were on a long farm, you know, and the plaster does something dreadful with, you know, artillery. But mostly the shells were landing at the northern end of the farm, and we were at the southern end, and we weren't affected too much by it. But at the northern end, there were some guns in position, and they collected a few casualties. Some chaps were carted away. I don't think they were fatally injured, but we never saw them anymore. They took them off to FA posts or, you know, hospital or somewhere. And anyhow, we got down to it for the night, and the next morning, we were not far from the River Po. The next morning, I thought, man, there's something strange here, because it was absolutely quiet. And we'd had 3 years more or less in action, and you could hear the noise all the time. There's some shelling going on somewhere, machine gun fire and all the rest of it. But it was quiet, not a sound. And then we soon found out the campaign had finished, the Germans had wrapped up. You know, the captain come along and he said, I'm going up to have a look at the Po. Are you coming? You know, so one or two of us went with him. And we passed all these hordes of Germans coming back, and they're all throwing the weapons into ditches and everything. But later on we availed ourselves of it, and we all had these little automatic pistols. And we went and had a look at the Po, and there was a maintenance, German maintenance thing up there. We went, got one or two useful tools, you know.
Such as?
Why, pliers and little hand vices and screwdrivers and things, you know, and things I could use. And altogether, it, you know, it was a joyful time. All the infantry lads were firing the Bren guns in the air, you know, and they're having a right party. But we didn't stay there long, we moved on to Austria.
Can you tell me about that, please?
I can't remember the name of the village we first went to. I meant to look at a map sometime, and I'd soon remember it.
Where was it near?
It was just over the border from Italy, in Austria. It wasn't very far over the border, and it wasn't far away from Yugoslavia, because we had trouble with the Yugoslavs later on, just a few days later.
What kind of trouble?
Well, they were going around, they were trying to plunder all the German army vehicles that had been left, and equipment and everything, and they even had the rounds on ours. So we had to put the guns in action and set up machine gun posts and tell them, you know, there's nothing doing.
These were Yugoslav soldiers?
Did what?
Yugoslav soldiers?
Yes, why, Tito's ragtag army it was, you know, there's... Oh yes, aye, and there's much activity with motorbike traffic, you know, messages coming and everything. Because we were the only unit in that area, there's nobody else round about there.
Did you not think very much over the Titoists then?
No, we didn't.
Why not?
Well, I mean, we didn't know what they were going to do if they could have started a mini war to pinch our equipment.
Was there any firing between you?
No, not so far as I know, no.
In this area, were there any Russians or Yugoslavs who were sent back?
Yes, it was our division who did that dirty work. They sent the Russians back.
What did you see of that?
Well, I forget just exactly where it was. It was in Austria somewhere. And all the Cossacks had been fighting for the Germans, you know. And they had to be sent back to Russia, to the Russian army, and the story went that they had a lot of families with them as well, these Cossacks, and they had to cross a bridge somewhere or other. It was the infantry lads who had to do the dirty work, and They say that as they went over the bridge, the Russians were just machine gunning them all, killing the whole lot.
Do you think it's true?
Ah, oh, perfectly true. No, it's true.
How close to the Cossacks did you come?
Oh, we used to see them trotting past. I mean, a lot of them looked Asiatic, you know. And they had the horses were quite small, ponies. Oh, we used to see them close up.
What did you think to them?
Well, I thought they were a scruffy bunch, you know, really. Nothing like you see on these old films where they show you the Cossacks singing out there. They're not a bit like that. No, it was a very sad time, really, because everybody knew what was going on.
So you knew what would happen to them?
Well, we had an idea, yeah.
Did you fraternise with the Cossacks?
No. No, we just saw them trotting past on the ponies.
How did you get on with the local Austrian civilians?
Oh, quite well. In fact, they were glad to see the British because there were a lot of Russians in the area when we finally got, and, you know, they were terrified of the Russians, and they were glad to see the English there, the British, because we didn't knock them about like the Russians did.
Did you see them being knocked about?
No, we're just hearsay. In fact, those lads who were so inclined, they found Austrian women to bed. There are plenty of lads in the army like that. And they were glad to have an English soldier with them. In fact, I remember the first time we went into Austria, there was a woman with a little kiddie, and this little kiddie was running over towards us, and this woman shouted, "Come here!" And one of the lads, you know, said, "Oh," he said, "don't speak English." Didn't know it was the same in German as English, except they say "come," K-O-M-H-I-E-R. It sounds the same. No, but we got on pretty well with the Austrians, in fact. Well, we actually finished off in the castle. Now, it's a funny thing that my army career, I started off in Ferniers Castle in Scotland, and I finished up at Eberstein Castle in Austria. And
what were conditions like in this castle?
Oh, they were pretty good. Better than the Ferniers Castle. We all had our own rooms and, you know. And, you know, it was pretty good. In fact, it was dead easy for us. But before then, when we first moved into Austria proper, we went to this skiers resort. It was what they call Malnitz. Have you heard of Malnitz?
No.
It was a ski resort, and there was a POW camp there, and some of our chaps were still there. They hadn't left. And this German camp commandant, he threw a party for us all before these ex-POWs went, and there was one chap there called Spencer, and they'd all been taken prisoner in Crete, and he could speak German like a native. He'd been there that long, and, you know, he threw this party to this German officer, and we had a really good time.
This was the commandant of the camp?
Yeah. Yes, he was. It'd been easy going on the POW. He'd been giving them passes to go down into the town. And a lot of them had girlfriends in the town as well. But in actual fact, I was put in charge of the camp later to accommodate all the German prisoners that were coming in. There were 4,000 prisoners coming in during the day, with all the stores and equipment and everything. And they were staying there a day, and then we were passing them on to the Americans. They were all going for repatriation. And course I got some good stuff there. I mean, when the trucks came in, the German trucks, I used to go through all the, see what there was in it, and they used to be Danish, but bottles of schnapps and fine liquors and all sorts of good food. Well, I used to just get on the phone to the sergeant major, and he'd send the truck down and he'd get it all and take it down to the sergeant's mess, which was a restaurant in Malnitz. And we were all accommodated in hotels, everything. So it was one of the best times we had, really.
Was it after this that you were demobbed?
No, well, this was about, when did the campaign finish? June, about July time, 1945. I didn't get demobbed until January 1946.
What were you doing in the meantime?
Well, I got leave. I got in November 1945. I got a month's leave. It was the first leave I'd had in more than 3 years. And when I went back, I thought, I got demobbed in the January. I thought it was a waste of time going back. But the last job I ever got, there was raging inflation in Austria, and they needed a senior NCO to go around all the post offices and displaced persons camps with all the information regarding a proposed devaluation of the currency. So we had to go around and we had to collect all the Austrian shillings in, and I should think that for every so many, was it 20 Austrian shillings, they got one new Austrian shilling, you see, to beat inflation, to change the currency. Well, I went out, they sent me a driver with a jeep from another unit, and it was, of course, winter time, January, and the deep snow, and we kept getting in snowdrifts, in ditches and everything, and there's only the two of us to get us out. And I had a map, and I found all the post offices and displaced persons camps, and delivered all the information. And then I come back.
What kind of information?
Well, about the money changing, the devaluation. Then I come back, and we were billeted in an old German barracks in Klagenfurt. And then we went round. We had about half a dozen German bankers. About a week later, we went round and we actually did the money changing. I was more or less in the guard commander, to, you know, because there's a lot of money in those trucks. And the bankers, you know, they were changing and they're all queuing up. I went round DP camps when they did the actual changing, and just stood at the door with just keeping an eye on things.
How were people in the DP camps behaving in Austria?
Well, they were pretty well subdued. There were all sorts of people, displaced persons and people who had been, possibly some of them, in concentration camps, perhaps, I don't know. But they're all a miserable looking lot. They'd had a rough time.
What happened when you were demobbed?
Well, we were in this castle. We had a good time while we were in the castle, because the burgomaster used to ask us around for a party, and which was drinking parties, you know. And we had a really good time. But the time came, and, you know, we had a good Christmas there. We had an Austrian cook, and she made us a smashing Christmas dinner. But the lads had too much to drink, and she made some beautiful dumplings, but they were throwing them about like snowballs. And, you know, it was a shame, really. And as I say, we went to these burgomaster's parties, and they did us proud as well. But it was, I forget, what it was, the 29th of January when I got demobbed, so I must have left Austria about the 2 days before. And actually, when I went back after this money changing job, a lot of the lads had been demobilised, and there's only two of my friends there, three of my fellow sergeants there, and the major. That's all the others had been demobbed, and it was awful quiet.
Awful?
Why, you know, all your pals gone, we'd handed in our equipment, what had gone when I went back off leave.
So you were just describing demob?
Yes, well, as I say, it was a sad time because a lot of my friends had gone. Two of them had gone before I went on the money changing job. They had more time to do, and they went to Greece, two of them. I never heard from them anymore. And as I say, there was four of us left in the sergeant's mess, myself, two lads from Leeds, and I don't know where the other one was from, Lancashire, I think, but he'd broken his ankle. They'd been playing rugby in the sergeant's mess with a medicine ball, and he'd finished up at the bottom of the heap and broke his ankle, so he was left there by himself. And of course the major was down in the village itself. So we come back by truck, you know, went to a transit camp. And a funny thing was that one of the transit camps we stopped at, I run into the sergeant who met me when I'd been called up in Glasgow, Sergeant Vernon. Except this time, he wasn't a sergeant, he was a bombardier. And I was surprised to see him. Anyhow, we come across the channel and I got demobbed at Aldershot.
How do you feel now about having served?
Oh, well, I wouldn't have missed it, really, because I registered for service in June 1939.
And in the army?
No, well, they asked me later on, after I'd been to register, I had to go to somewhere down Jameson Street, and near the Daily Mail buildings that used to be there, and I had to see a board or something, committee, and they asked me what service I wanted to be in. Well, I said, I'm an engineering apprentice, I'd like to be in the Air Force, you know. And I left it at that, and I was surprised when I got called up and banged in the army.
Why had you volunteered? Why had you volunteered?
I didn't volunteer, I was called up.
No, but when you registered?
Oh, yeah.
Had you volunteered to register?
Oh, no, no.
That was compulsory?
Compulsory. Well, I had my brother-in-law, he was in the military police, and he joined the Terriers, you know, before the war started. He said, why don't you come with me and you can join? So I went with him, but they wouldn't have me. They said, you're an engineering worker, you won't get called up. I wasn't sorry, really. I was better off in the army, I think, than any of the other services.
Why?
Well, the comradeship. I mean, when we were on Stradishall Aerodrome, the bomber base, you know, in 1940, Battle of Britain Town, then these Air Force chaps were coming in, and they didn't know each other. I mean, there's so many men on the camp that they only knew the only media circle, whereas in the army I knew every man in the regiment just about.
Did you have any after effects of having served?
Well, I think it took me about 10 years to get over the war.
How do you mean?
Well, I didn't feel settled, you know. And I was 27 when I came out. I turned 27, I was still 20 when I was called up, you see. Well, during that period, that's the time when you can start making on a bit, isn't it? In your 20s, if you're looking to improve yourself and find a better paying job.
What exactly do you mean that your war service unsettled you? How exactly?
Well, I mean, I've read about people who've been unsettled at some of these campaigns before. Like in today's paper, I think about the Falklands veterans felt unsettled when they come home again, and they'd been so used to army life they didn't know any other life. That's the way I mean. And they didn't seem to want us back, a lot of people, because as I say, I was called up at the age of 20, had about 6 weeks to go to my 21st birthday, by which time I would have finished my apprenticeship. But because I was called up before I finished it, Then they said you'll have to do another year as an apprentice, and the apprentice's pay, which I did. So I didn't think that was very fair. And there was a lot of younger chaps there who hadn't been in the services at all, you know, 19 and 20 years old, and they had all the best jobs.